The old woman walked with her head thrust forward, as if she were in a hurry to get where she was going. The low-heeled shoes on her long, narrow feet were more practical than stylish, a smart choice given how much walking she did around the city. On her head, she wore a kerchief, as a light rain had begun to fall. The sidewalks of New York's Greenwich Village were wet and slippery that April morning, and the air was cool, not even 50 degrees. As she walked, the old woman was lost in thought, a habit for which her friends frequently admonished her. For most of her 75 years, a barrage of ideas, hopes, desires, and regrets had been in constant collision in her mind. Something was always brewing, ready to burst. Ever since she was a small girl, she had been possessed of extraordinary drive and purpose, and while her body might be slowing down, her mind churned as fast as ever, light years away from the mundane world around her. That week, she was consumed by thoughts about how to unite American women for decisive action against the threat of worldwide nuclear slaughter, and how to pass laws to prohibit discrimination based on race, religion, or national origin, as she wrote in her nationally syndicated newspaper column. So it was no surprise that when she stepped off the curb at 8th Street, she failed to notice a car that was backing up toward her. Nor, unfortunately, did the driver see her. The car struck her in the hip. Like an ancient tree, the woman fell onto the asphalt. A screech of brakes rent the air as the driver, a young man, realized what had happened. He jumped out of the car and ran around back. The old woman seemed unhurt. With some effort, she got to her feet, clutching her purse and conscious of the stares of passers-by. Her sharp blue eyes fixed on the driver. She told him he should go, drive away, before someone came along and made a fuss. Did the young man recognize her? He might easily have, as the old woman with the braided gray bun was very familiar to most Americans in 1960, and to many people around the globe. For more than 40 years, she had lived in the public eye. Millions loved her for her work. Some hated her for it. The widow of a president, the niece of another, she was also finally a stateswoman in her own right, a latter-day accomplishment few would ever have predicted when she was a neglected and ridiculed child. If the driver of the car knew he had hit Eleanor Roosevelt, he never let the fact become public. He simply did as he was instructed. He got back in his car and sped away. Eleanor was glad of it. She didn't want to be the cause of any trouble for the young man. She'd tell a friend the driver was a Negro, and she knew the trouble policemen could sometimes make for Negro boys. Limping across the street on a swollen ankle, Eleanor arrived at the salon of Francois de Paris, the celebrity hairdresser, where she'd been asked to speak at a cancer fund luncheon. Despite her discomfort, she soldiered through the event, but afterward she gave in and allowed her doctor to wrap her ankle. That was all the coddling Eleanor would allow herself. She adamantly declined the doctor's request that she cancel the rest of her day's schedule. Hobbling in on a crutch to another fundraiser that night, the former First Lady and current UN ambassador was clever enough to use her injury to her advantage. She told her friend later that when people saw she was in pain, they coughed up more cash. The lightheartedness, however, belied the ache. Over the course of her 7 decades, Eleanor had learned how to live with pain, how to manage it, even how to use it. That didn't mean she didn't feel it. That sprained ankle, inconsequential on its own, marked the beginning of a long decline for Eleanor. Days later, she received a far more serious diagnosis from her doctor. She was suffering from aplastic anemia, for which there was no cure. It was the most basic of diseases, striking the bone marrow, the very core of what kept the body running. The diagnosis explained the increasing pain and fatigue Eleanor had been feeling, which she understood now would only get worse. Over the ensuing months, she would endure hospitalizations, transfusions, fevers, painkillers, and depression.